Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Welcome to Dragoncast, home of House of the Dragon. Gather your small council, send out your ravens and call in your bannermen. I'm Hand of the King, Jaime East, here to guide you through the insane world of Westeros and beyond. Hello, hello everybody. Welcome to a strange episode of Dragoncast, actually. A different episode of Dragoncast. I'm Jaime East.
And I am Chris Mandel.
This is a different episode because A, we're not talking about Succession. B, we're not doing a Game of Thrones rewatch episode. C, it's not really about House of the Dragon. We're just kind of like having a chat. We've got some news. Yeah. We've decided to do the first things first. Let's get the kind of diary out of the way.
Big
news.
We
are going to be doing the live stream of the final episode of Game of Thrones on the 12th. Of June, which is Monday, the 12th of June.
That is Monday. It
will be in the evening. I'm going to kind of make some kind of like crazy sweeping statement and say it will be around kind of like 8:30 kind of time, maybe something like that.
Yeah.
I need to work out how to set it up on YouTube. It will be live streamed on YouTube, maybe on Twitter as well. I've got no idea what I'm doing, but we'll work it out. So that would be fun. But we thought we'd hang out and get together. We miss each other.
We do. And I haven't seen you in person since the Succession premiere we went to.
Bloody hell. Oh my God, outside that museum in the rain. And
in the rain. Oh, in the rain, yeah.
How romantic. So we have got an interview, though. Really delighted. A bit later on, you'll be hearing from Yousef Kakor and Catherine Parkinson, who are two fantastic actors, and they are in the new ITVX series, Significant Other. More about that later. I guess the big show of the week, now that we're all still kind of like mourning Succession, and already people are like, oh, when's it going to come back? There's already been talk of a movie. Mm. I heard a movie mentioned, which I thought was a bit... I'm not sure I want a Succession movie, I have to say.
I thought the stories that came out about that, I just saw it and thought, that is absolute dog shit. No way will that happen.
No, we've already...
Because the main thing is, it's actually not got massive ratings. This is not Game of Thrones.
2.9 million people watched the finale, and it's a huge cultural talking point in the middle class set, I think.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
you're right, it's not...
I thought that, when you get these stories, a lot of it is just people trying to like carry the conversation, and someone will get interviewed by a journalist and they'll say, would you do a movie? And they'll say, well, never say never, because you don't want to close too many windows or doors, do you? But,
yeah, exactly. Assistant wardrobe director says, we're going to do a movie. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
We're not, we don't hate the idea of doing a movie, becomes let's do a movie. I just don't think it works.
Good piece in, I think it might have been Vulture, maybe it was Variety, which did a really good article about actually there will almost certainly be something from Succession again. If you look back over the history of HBO's IP and its successes, it has never, ever not done something else with its IP. Sopranos had the Many Saints of Newark. Sex and the City had the whatever that was
and
called.
Just Like That.
and so there, it's like a Greg statement, and so let it be said, therefore. What else? Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon, of course. And there are other few more examples of that as well. So it will almost certainly be back in some shape or form, which is kind of exciting. But I said on the radio over the weekend, let's leave it 10 years. I want a nice, healthy time jump. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Succession. What have you been watching? Have you seen anything good this week? Have you started anything?
Yeah, this week we started Silo. On Apple TV Plus.
Very into
that. Yeah, very, now, very into that. So we only watched the first episode, but I'm very into it.
So Silo, so I'd read, so these are based on a series of books, which were originally called the Wall Trilogy, back in, released in, I think they may have been like a Kindle, early like Kindle success, and then bled over into actual books. But I devoured all of them because I love them. They're really, it's like a sci-fi, they're like a really good sci-fi, dystopian sci-fi, almost Dune / Blade Runner / kind of that kind of thing, Mad Max-y style.
What did you say the book series was called? The Wall?
Wool, as in woolly jumper.
Oh, because here's the thing, right? I've seen one episode and it's like a classic sort of mystery setup, right?
Yes.
But also I'm like, I can't tell what this show is. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's sort of Hunger Games-y. It's a bit apocalyptic.
It's
giving like Lost. It also just reminds me of Arrival. Remember that 2016 film with Amy Adams? It's kind of got all this. But when you said it was called the Wool Trilogy, I was like, that is the weirdest name for the
book. Yeah, I can see why they've changed it. I can see why they changed
it. I kept thinking, I mean, not to spoil for anyone who's either not read the book or watched the show, does wool play a big part in this series? Is it about wool?
Now, it's been a minute since I read them. And it took me like half an episode for me to go, hang on a minute, this is a complete rip off of the Wall Trilogy that I read. I Googled it.
They
and I was
stole
like, oh,
it.
Holy shit. If I remember correctly, we're in for a long ride here. This has got the potential.
Interesting. Okay.
This has got the potential to be kind of Thrones length, if it so wishes. And this may or may not be the origin story of all of that. I think if I remember rightly, where we join it at this point is almost midway through, I think. So
because there was a big timeline jump in the episode.
Yeah. There's a lot of mythology that we need to learn about. So to give the listeners some context, Silo refers to these, there's been some cataclysmic world event that means that people cannot go outside, we think. And everybody, the population live in these giant silos, silo.
I was going to say, hang on a minute. I was like, spoiler. Is there one silo or are there multiple silos?
Moving on.
No.
This huge kind of like silo that is what, 60? I mean, it looks like hundreds of
70. It's 70 floors.
70 floors, and each floor is like a national theatre sized building.
Yeah, so like someone, if you want to go to the bottom, it takes a whole day.
Yeah. So you see lots of like CGI kind of people walking up and down concrete ramps, like with the knapsacks, don't you?
Go on, sorry.
We join, it's like you say, it's a mystery box kind of thriller. Sci-fi thing. Someone discovers something that holds the key to something, or that could reveal something about something. You don't really need to know much more than that, other than
that in itself is compelling to me. Like, I love a mystery.
It's like, thank you very much. We need to find out. And it's, you know, it's a pretty well-worn trope. Someone dies at the beginning, leaving a secret, bequeathing a secret onto somebody else, etc., etc. that's a really good premise. And like you say, already hooked. It's got a great cast. It looks fantastic. It looks really expensive. But I would say...
Looks amazing. That
we haven't even scratched the surface of anything. It's like it's one of those ones where it kind of becomes great. So I'm already like thinking this is my new favorite show.
Yeah. So I can't wait to watch episode two. And I think there have been some shows, maybe that I won't name just in case anyone comes after me, where I feel like watching it is like a chore. And you're like, and this is not like that so far. I'm really excited. So a couple of observations I have. Mm-hmm. The fact that everyone has to take the stairs to go anywhere is ridiculous. Like, there's a canteen. It's like
they would have invented an elevator, surely.
Or just a pulley system. I mean, it's crazy. They have, you know, chefs. They have a kitchen. They have presumably some kind of fire or some kind of... And I'm like, you guys haven't thought about a pulley system? Because there's 70 floors, but like, yeah, and it takes forever to do, you know, like to run around. And I kept saying to Rob when we were watching it, I was like, you know, the Covent Garden tube station, those steps, that's 12 floors.
They're a lot.
12, yeah. It's the equivalent of a 12-story building. And there's all these signs for people who haven't had the privilege of coming to the West End and going to Covent Garden. They've got all these signs being like, please consider taking the lift. And it's, then the next sign is like, you really should take the lift. It's a hundred and however many steps.
So if that's
12 floors, this is 70. It's like six Covent Gardens deep, which is absolutely crazy. And one character just pops down there. I mean, it does take her like an entire day.
Yeah.
And she gets back and she's so, because she goes all the way and it comes all the way back. She's so knackered, she just goes straight to bed, which I just thought that was the most relatable thing I've seen. Because every time I go to Covent Garden, as soon as I get off the tube, I just want to go to bed, you know. And that's only like a bit of it.
I have walked enough, yeah. It's got a good cast, relatable to Dragoncast cast, actually. And, in fact, all of the podcasts we've
done. Who from Dragoncast is on there?
Excuse me. Oh, hang on a sec. What episode are you on?
Episode one. For fuck's sake.
No, it's not. Okay.
Well, it's not a spoiler, but...
It's not a spoiler. You're going to meet Jorah. Ian Glenn's in this.
Jorah's... I didn't know he was... God, they've kept that quiet.
Yeah, Jorah's in this with a wonderful American accent. And Harriet Walker, who's
Lady Caroline on Succession. I had no idea.
Yeah. And it's got.
I knew Harriet was.
Yeah. Rebecca Ferguson is the lead in this season for sure. Who is eminently watchable. I really enjoy everything that she's in. And it's got Rashida Jones, who like is in her first. I'm going to say first proper serious role. We knew her from not The Office. Yeah. No.
Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Oh no, yeah, she was in Parks and Rec. Yeah, she was in Parks and Rec.
It's got Tim Robbins.
I have a confession to make, though.
Go on.
The whole time I watched the episode, I was like, this woman is really good, and she is the spit of Rashida Jones. didn't even make the connection. I just thought, what's she doing here? You know, and sometimes you get like a serious actor doing a comedy. Or a funny actor doing a drama. I was like, she wouldn't be here. Why would she be
100%.
Here?
100%. Who plays the mayor? Who was the, if I, Geraldine James. Oh my God, Geraldine James.
Yeah, but what's she famous from?
Geraldine James, you'll know her. She's been in so much stuff. She's been in, proper British, she's Downton Abbey she's been in. She's in Rogue One. Sorry, I'm just going through IMDb at the moment.
I was trying to figure out the thing that I like.
She's been in a thing. Yeah, it's like Girl with a Dragon Tattoo. She was popped up in Little Britain every now and then. It won't have been that.
Poirot.
Okay. She's been in like loads of Calendar Girls, that kind of thing.
No, I recognize her from the episode because I was like, It's that woman.
Band of Gold. No. Band of Gold.
No, I know what it is, and it's, you're going to hate this because this isn't very cultured. She was in Little Britain.
Oh, she was the Little woman. Britain.
Yeah, that's what I remember her from. Specifically, she's the mum in the sketch where the grown man wants to breastfeed his mum.
Bitty. Little bit of Bitty. Mummy have Bitty. Jeez. Yes. Okay. That's arguably her. the only half decent thing that did. Yeah.
She fair has enough. The so most storied career in like stage and theatre and tell you, and then I go, it's the woman from Bitty.
So
my God,
it's I would say like at this point, let's not talk about it too much more. What I would say is we've had a few people writing in and asking what we're going to be talking about next. Jump onto Silo, it's on Apple TV Plus now. Watch it, let us know what you think.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't think it drops. It's not a binge drop, is it? It's a weekly drop.
No, it's all there. I think it's all there. Oh, well, I thought there? It was all there.
Maybe yeah. It is. Maybe I've got it wrong. Apple do like to tease us with them, though. So, but do watch it and let us know what you think. And maybe yeah, we can talk about it a bit more as the mystery unfurls. I think there'll be lots to talk about. It's got lots of twists. It's got lots of turns. Got lots of shot moments. I think Lost is a really good comparison, but it doesn't. It's because it's based on really well written novels. It won't suffer from the same problems that Lost had.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, sidebar on Lost, I'm shocked. Have you read the pieces about Lost that came out this week
in Variety,
how fucking problematic it was whilst it's being filmed. My God, it was awful.
There was a huge story in Variety that broke, and it was
Damon Lindelof. Yeah,
Damon Lindelof apologized for what happened on the show. So the background for people that haven't read this is that the journalist Mo Ryan, who is a former TV critic, has a new book out called Burn It Down: Power, Complicity, and a Call for Change in Hollywood. And it's about the systems and norms that led to a lot of problems with strikes, with labor unrest, with discrimination in Hollywood, with all this kind of thing. And Variety got the first, or was it Vanity? Sorry, it was Vanity Fair, I think.
Maybe Vanity Fair.
They did
Fair,
the first serialization. They took the chapter that is about Lost, which is a really revelatory piece because, you know, that's one of my favorite shows. And it was one of the earliest things I can remember being obsessed with. And Mo Ryan's piece kind of looks at how the staff were appalling to one another and they were quite awful to the cast members as well. And Harold Perrineau,
borderline. Was it borderline racism or was it just out and out?
I think out and out racism in terms of one thing I was going to get to, which is the way that they kill off a black character. They want the character like lynched and to be like have his genitals mutilated, and the actor sort of says, I think the optics of this are really awful, and they kind of just tell him to like fuck off. Basically, they don't do that in the end because of health and safety reasons around suspending an actor from a tree, but it's just the kind of callousness that they had and the callousness that they had towards it. Harold Perrineau, who's obviously very well known from Romeo and Juliet, was one of the first actors that signed on to do Lost, and one of the biggest names at the time.
I didn't know he was like the big draw of when it was being cast.
Obviously, Michael, he is a father. His son Walt crashes on the island with him. They just don't know what to do with him after a while, and they write him out. And it's just the treatment he had from them is awful. So Harold speaks to them. Some of the writers on the record and anonymously speak to Mo Ryan. It's a really astonishing piece. I urge people to read it. Damon Lindelof
I'll put the link in the apology
and notes. Said, you know, it's really astonishing. The other thing that I really didn't appreciate at the time, Lost had 22 to 24 episodes per year, which was the norm then. Now you're lucky if you get 10. It's really, really rare to get more than that. And one of the things I didn't realize is that because of the amount of work they had to do, writers got hired and fired. If the writers didn't like a storyline, they would get rid of the writers that worked on that character. They brought new writers in most years. And by the third season, they didn't really have any of the original writers. And actually, if we did, somebody was talking to us on Twitter about whether we would do a Lost rewatch. And I think What's fascinating to me is if you watch that back, I think you will get a very, very inconsistent show because you literally have like 10 different groups of people writing it. And it's just not like that anymore. If you look at Succession, it's written by the same six people.
Yeah, 100%.
It's fascinating.
It was fascinating. And also, you know, I was really surprised by Damon Lindelof because he built up such a cachet of armor with Watchmen. As in terms of the way he tackled segregation and race and all the problems in America in the '50s, is particularly around lynching. To read that is just like, wow.
Yeah.
What's going on there? We'll put the link in the story notes. Urge you to go and read it if you can. It's
really so fantastic. Sick. Get a cup of coffee, sit down, read it. It's quite long, but just meticulously reported, I think, as well. I think when we're talking about issues like this, the one thing, it's really, really well reported. Lots of sources. Vanity Fair, like they do, you know, and this is published as well. So they've got publishers, legal teams corroborating and fact checking, and then Vanity Fair will do like an extra layer of this. And it is incredible. Speaking of controversial things, you watched the first episode of The Idol last night.
Oh boy. Oh boy, oh boy.
I've been really looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this.
I tell you what, let's take a break whilst I gather my thoughts, and we'll come back and get straight into The Idol.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to this floating episode of Dragoncast. So, The Idol is the new HBO flagship series on tentpole series that's on at the moment. You know, they like to have one thing on at any time that is causing a bit of a buzz. It has its euphoria. They never really clash. They never really have two shows on at once, do they? Apart from, I guess, Barry and Succession, but they were two very different.
This bits. Is their premium. It's taken the Succession slot, right?
So it's their premium thing. It's taken the Succession slot. I cannot for the life of me work out what HBO subscriber is going to watch this. It is without a doubt one of the shittest, but like amazing, hate-watchy, ridiculous thing I've seen in a long time. But it also made me feel really uncomfortable as a 50-year-old man sat there on his own watching this show. It was like, I don't really think I should be watching this show. Like Euphoria, and it's, you know, and ultimately the problem lies with a couple of things. One is the writing. It's appalling. The script is just absolutely shocking. It's just bad. Secondly, it's just clearly been devised by Sam Levinson, who's the guy behind Euphoria, and Abel, aka The Weeknd, as this kind of, and you can see, you can close your eyes and picture the drinks, meetings, and the meals that were had discussing the project. You know what we should do? We should do this. And they both come out of this extremely badly. It is, the premise is this. It's basically a thin veneer, gossamer thin portrayal of someone like Britney Spears, of a fictional pop star, like your Britney, like your Christina Aguilera, played by Lily Rose Depp, who is beautiful, young, kind of 24-year-old. And it is just horrifically voyeuristic. Like, all the bad bits of Euphoria just eked out for an hour in this, with on top of that, like a Showgirls-esque cast of characters and some really bad writing and some really surprising cast members as well. Daniel Levy's in this, who I kind of just thought, man, I thought you had some taste. I thought you know, did you not read this? Did you just fancy the money? What was going on here?
Well, the problem is, though, is it got this huge overhaul. Like, I think what people signed up for and what has been quite different, because there was this. That. We actually talked about the Rolling Stone story on the podcast, didn't we? This was in February, I think. A big story on Rolling Stone that said, like, the show has veered off course. At the time, there wasn't really a trailer. There wasn't a release date. And there were all these reports that the female showrunner, who had made 80% of the show at this point, was booted off. The Weeknd came on board and had a greater involvement in writing and creative direction on it. And there was a story in Deadline. I was sort of looking at this up today because I knew we'd be talking about it. Back in April of last year, a report in Deadline, The Weeknd was concerned that the plot was too focused on the woman at the center of it, who is played by Lily Rose Depp. And the original outline was that she is this young, incredibly talented young artist who falls under the spell of this cult leader who The Weeknd plays. And I mean, I haven't seen episode one yet, and I will be watching it, but the sort of treatment now is, what if The Weeknd is not a psycho, but in fact is just an absolute sex obsessed playboy, and also she legitimately is in love with him, and also she loves being choked. And what a car crash to go from one thing to another, to go from examining this woman in an interested way to sort of using her as a bit more of an object.
And I don't know, obviously don't know The Weeknd, and I don't know him, and I'm not putting words in his mouth or even surmising, but it gives the impression, that this is like a bored pop star, aka The Weeknd, who's gone, what I want to do? I want to make like a really sexy, kind of edgy TV show and extend my brand, and how about I'll just like have sex with a load of women on telly? That would be really cool, right? No one's gone, no, we can't tell The Weeknd no. Within the first 2 minutes of the opening shot, you've got a great opening shot, actually, of it's like a bit like I, Tonya. You know, the shot where Margot Robbie's putting on a makeup or taking a makeup off. It's just that great transformation. There's a really good opening shot with Lily Rose Depp, who seems like a really accomplished actor. Sample lines from the first couple of minutes, by which the first couple of minutes, the plot is basically that she's at a photo shoot for her album, and it's been discovered that there is a photo of her on Twitter where a guy has come on her face. Okay, this is within like a minute, and they're all going, oh my God, is that a bukkake? No, a bukkake is when it's more than one man. Oh, okay. Someone says the actual words, the brazen little minx, like with no irony at all. The phrase like, yeah, but mental illness is sexy, is another one. It's like, and it's got Hank Azora, I think, does like voice acting. Azaria from Toy Story.
He's from The Simpsons.
From The Simpsons. Of course, that's it, not Toy Story. He plays like one of the managers, and who's like the awful accent for a voice actor. And it's just the most bizarre. Oh, that's another line. Having you around is like living in communist China.
What does that mean?
It's like, oh, don't be such a drag. You know, it's giving
right. Oh my God. Right.
Oh my God. You're so boring. Having you around is like living in communist China.
Every line that you read could be like, I'm sorry, but I just hear accidental partridge.
Exactly. But, and then it goes like, she's got this, the one good character in it is her best friend, who's this like dorky kind of like her assistant slash best friend. She's really good, actually. But there's a line where we meet the Weeknd's character, whose name escapes me. I think it's called something weird like Tapen, or
he's got a double, his first name and his second name are the same. It's like Mario. Mario's name is Mario.
Tedros, his name is. And we're introduced to him in the most ridiculous scene ever. He's got like a big long, he's got a big long ponytail, like swept back.
Oh, yeah, like I a thought rat in all tail.
The
pitch,
I, yeah. The opening, the title of the show is called Pop Tarts and Rat Tails. And he's got this horrible rat tail. I thought the pictures of him, he'd shaved his head. I was like, okay, that looks quite good. But no, it's like a Mexican kind of cartel, kind of like drug baron like thing. He wears a raincoat all the time, like he's in, I don't know, Wall Street or something. And the opening scene is he's a DJ in a nightclub. He's DJing in a nightclub.
Okay.
Jocelyn, played by Lily Rose Depp, is supposed to be the most famous pop star in the world, right?
Yeah.
Walks into this nightclub, like proper HBO style nightclub, where it's like, oh my God, it's so sexy. They're dancing to like a Weeknd remix of Like a Prayer by Madonna. Everyone's going crazy. Okay. In walks Jocelyn. No one bats an eyelid. No one looks at her. Fair enough. She's dancing like just on her own on the dance floor. The guy's like, turns off the music and is like, oh my God, is that you, Jocelyn? And she's like, oh, who's there? And he's like, I need to dance with you immediately. And like puts the music up and then just starts sashaying towards her, like in the, like almost like doing a swinging rope kind of lasso thing.
Oh my God, that's so weird.
And they immediately start like grinding, like immediately.
They then
get it on in the stairs, and her friend says to her, "This encapsulates the whole problem." Her friend says to her, "I don't like him. He's so rapey, right?" And she just says, "Yeah, I kind of like that about him."
Oh my God, that is the most written by a man.
Exactly.
Women are always saying this.
He's such a bad character that can only have been written by the man that is playing him.
It sounds so bad. I mean,
you're going to hate watch it. There's a baddie in it who is Andrew Tate, like just looks like Andrew Tate. It's like, it's just like,
oh my God.
There's this whole thing. But I think like, about,
it's, sorry, go on.
There's this section where they're talking about like Prince. Are you saying that Prince doesn't make pop music? Doesn't make great pop music? If he released When Doves Cry tomorrow, it would still be a smash hit. Yeah, I know. I love Prince. Me too. It's like, what the fuck is this? It's just, it's so bad. So, but
I've seen nothing but like mean reviews about it.
I mean, it's difficult not to be mean about it, because a lot of people have clearly worked very hard at it, and that story about 80% of it, you know, being finished and then the Weeknd just coming and wanking all over it. The rest of it, the other 20% is sad, because a lot of people have done a lot of good work on it. Mm. Yeah. It's a lot. It's a lot to do. I would say watch it and see, and just to kind of get, just so you know what is going on. I can't see myself getting sucked into the story. What story? Because it is just going to be, they even play Basic Instinct in the background in a few scenes, just to kind of go, oh, this is the kind of vibe.
This,
you know,
vibe.
You remember it used to be cool back then. You remember in 1990, it was fine.
Remember Basic Instinct, I say to a 25-year-old.
But their opening, the kind of sex scene. It's like he puts a red scarf over her head, chokes her with it, makes her open her mouth, and then stabs a knife into the mouth hole so that she can breathe. This is like, they've just met.
Like second date. Crazy. The thing is, what it sounded like, initially, bearing in mind it's been in development for 3 years, which is not, you know, not too long, but like it was initially supposed to come out and take the slot after House of the Dragon. That's how delayed it's been.
Blimey.
But
okay,
this idea of like a woman getting sucked into like the dark underbelly of the industry is a great premise for a show, yeah, especially 100%. When you've got like, you know, you're making music alongside it. The Weeknd is doing like a record.
The music is great.
Yeah. Also, this new song that he's done with Madonna is like fucking amazing. Like, say what you will about him, but consistently good musician. But the show that they wanted to make, the show that was being made, I think you do have to have women leading the charge creatively on what this woman is.
That story's got to be told through the prism of the female perspective, right?
That's what you want. And also, like, I was just going to say, I was like, you want young people doing this, not these two old farts. Google The Weeknd. He's fucking younger than I am.
Is he?
Yes.
He should know better, shouldn't he?
You want like young 25-year-old women in the room telling you what it's like when they go out. What you don't want is a couple of hyperactive little slime puppies who should know better.
Yeah.
Going, what do women write about? What do women think about being choked? Like, it just seems weird.
They just thought about what would be sexy. What would we want to do?
And it's just I think also the reaction. I mean, GQ today have got a story which is the cringiest lines from the idol ranked. And I just think like, when you think you're sexy and like edgy and people are saying like, it's just really cringe. I just think, I mean, I'm fascinated what the rest of the season is like. I mean, I never really got into Euphoria comparatively, but you know, that show is really good at like,
loved Euphoria.
Doing a really good job at sort of centering certain people's stories. I mean, it looks to me like tragedy porn. Like, I can't really get into like, oh my God, everyone's, it's just not really my kind of thing.
Sexy's really hard to get right, though, isn't it? Has there ever been a show or a film that has got sexy right?
Well, I think the problem is that they want the sexiness to be aspirational, and I think when you want it badly enough, it just looks silly. Like, one of the reasons Succession worked is there was no sex. And it was like a really, like, they were all rich and they were all really wealthy. But they were the lamest people, all of them. You saw them go to that dive bar in episode 2 of the last season, and they're all like, look like someone's going to come out and try and, like, you know, steal from them or something. They just all look so out of touch because they're not allowed to choose the music. They didn't choose the veneered floors. They don't like the drinks.
Yeah.
I think what if the idol is going to be guilty of anything, it's wanting to be cool too much. And I think that, like, you know, you can't want it. Exactly. I mean, I will be watching it because I do think, you know, I mean, it's expensive. The 80% they scrapped cost $75 million. That's all gone. And they reshot everything. I don't know how many episodes there are, but the initial run was only supposed to be 6. But it might be that there's
I think it's 5. No, I think it's 5.
5?
I think so.
5 episodes?
When I looked on the planner, it said 1 of 5, maybe. Maybe I've got that wrong. Let me just see if I can see.
5 episodes not be kind of a season.
Well, Wikipedia only have four up.
What? I mean, 4. I know 4 were given to critics. Isn't that just crazy?
Maybe that's right.
Like, but also, this is the, you know, it sounds like it started in a sort of boon period for TV. And it's obviously coming out now where we've got these strikes, we've got these like wild budget cuts. Nobody's making any money on the shows that they're working on. And if anyone is watching it and has any more thoughts, let us know, because maybe we'll check in on, you know.
Yeah, I'm interested. Yeah, let us know what you think. You know, it's worth talking about, that's for sure. But
fancy
a bit of, should we have a bit of breath of fresh air? Should we kind of like do a complete pivot? This will please ITV, coming off the back of that chat. One of my favorite gigs that I do is I go and host an event for ITV Studios where I talk about up and coming shows, and I did one in January and got a chance to speak to Catherine Parkinson and Youssef Kakor back then for their show. It's called Significant Other, and it is just coming out. It's coming out on June the 8th, which if you're listening to this on release day, will be today. It's all available on ITVX, and it's just like a really nice, it's kind of like the antithesis of every show that we've ever talked about, really. It's a rom-com for a start. It's a terrestrial television rom-com, which we've never done a terrestrial show before. And I could watch Catherine and Youssef in Read the Telephone Directories. They're both so great. Catherine has been so good in, like, she was in Humans and like all the rest of it.
Yes, love her.
And Youssef's been in a whole bunch of stuff as well, including, as you'll listen to this chat, he's come very, very close quite a lot of times to getting into Westeros. And he's not bitter about it, but have a listen to this. Have a listen to this. So normally on Dragoncast, we focus on like horrifically dense and, like, let's be frank, depressing dramas. And so we've decided to kind of branch out a little bit, and delighted to be speaking to two people who've got a show coming out called Significant Other, which is coming out on ITVX very, very soon. I'd like to welcome Youssef Kakor and Catherine Parkinson to Dragoncast. How are you doing?
Hello.
Good, thank you. Hello.
A slightly less glamorous situation than the last time we met. The last time we spoke, we were on stage at Leicester Square's Odeon. Kind of like Odeon, like all dolled up to the nines.
Yeah, I'd had hair and makeup. I apologise. This is au naturel.
No, everyone loves a hoodie on a Friday. That was the first time that you guys had spoken about the show. To give it some context, I was hosting an event for ITV where we were kind of like introducing all the different shows to international buyers. It was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed it. How do you find talking about?
I enjoyed it, but I do always prefer it if they've watched it before we talk about it. Do you know what I mean?
Didn't
the episode go out after we chatted about it?
That's correct. Yeah.
I would have preferred it, I think, just because you feel like you're being a bit indulgent if you talk about it when nobody's watched it. Like, I don't care.
So how long ago did you film this? This was like November last year, is that right?
September, October, was it?
Yeah. September, October last year, yeah.
And you guys are both busy actors. Presumably you've had like jobs and jobs and jobs in between that. How difficult is it to then try and cast your mind back and put yourself into like a significant other mode?
I mean, not difficult with this, because I think Youssef and I both enjoyed it so much, and and I feel so engaged with the project still because of that, and I'm really hoping we get to do it again. But definitely that is the case sometimes. I've had to do publicity for shows and I cannot remember my character's name. but that's just not the case on this, because I absolutely loved every minute of it. So,
Youssef, for listeners that haven't yet seen the trailer or kind of got to grips with what it is, take us through like the back of the fag packet pitch for Significant Other.
So, you know, the word dark comedy is what kind of was bandied about in the beginning, but I think people have kind of agreed that maybe that's a bit of a bum steer. And unromantic romantic comedy, which I like that what it is. And describing the beginning of the show, I think, has always been my pitch for it. It opens on somebody taking a bunch of pills, trying to commit suicide. He gets into bed, gets all tucked up, and as he's drifting off, there's a banging at his door, and it's his neighbour, who he's never met. She's having a heart attack. So there's these two people who are an absolute mess, and that's where we begin, and their relationship sort of carries on from there. And so it's a very unconventional way of telling a love story.
Catherine, you play Anna, recipient of said suspected heart attack. What kind of frame of mind would you say Anna is in at the beginning of the series then? You're both in a bit of a mess, right?
I think we are, but I think something I was quite careful to not do was let her feel sorry for herself. Because, you know, when people are in a bit of a mess but don't even think they are in a mess, that's even sort of more...
Hi, that's me. Hello.
So I don't think she works at home and she doesn't really see people day to day. They live in this quite anonymous block of flats in this busy city and, you know, in that modern way is able to do all of her work as a subtitler from home on her computer. And then her romantic situation is that she has been involved for a few years with a married guy and has broken that off because it's not giving her anything. She's definitely quite lonely, but I don't think she knows that she's lonely. And she's certainly never met her neighbour until they're thrown together because the ambulance have said, you've got to be with someone.
I think a lot of people are going to be able to relate to her. I mean, you know, lockdown happened and people just like got into this habit of, I mean, I've been locked in this room literally for 3 years. Like that Leicester,
3 years.
The time that we met in Leicester Square was like about the third.
You, it was a virtual you.
The third time I'd been into London since like lockdown. It was crazy. Wow. But you do find yourself like not really realising the effect of that kind of thing, don't you? You know, especially when you can work from home and you've got no real reason to travel. It does put you
in a bit of a weird
space.
I mean, I think there's a reason that people are a bit sort of detached in a city from their neighbours, because if you do sort of chat to your, in this close living quarters where you're on top of each other, if you do discover that they're a complete nightmare, then that's difficult to then sort of, so I think that's because I sort of thought, why are people so kind of defensive and distant? Because as soon as I go down to where my parents are in the country, everyone's chatting all the time. And I sort of think, but there's a politeness in it, in that detachment, I think. It's about saying, we're sharing a small space.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk to you in case we don't like each other.
Yeah, because that would just be awful, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
You, Seth, do you know your neighbours? Do you know your neighbours' names?
My wife's very good about meeting our neighbours. You know, every time I've lived in a big city, be it New York or London, I have not known my neighbours. Every time I've left, where it's sort of, I live quite far out now in the countryside. And it's a lot more, you know, in your countryside, you need allies in case the apocalypse comes.
You do.
So,
yeah.
You know, so you get to know the people that you live next to.
Yeah.
Whereas in the city, you've got everything you need. Why knock on your neighbour's door? Because they might be a psycho. So
absolutely true. I mean, the horrific thought of like saying hello to someone once is bad enough. But then if you say hello once, every time you catch each other's eye, you've got to do the same.
It's like the school gate. You can't maintain that level of jollity. I cannot do it.
What you can maintain is through four children, my eldest is 30, is never speaking to anyone once throughout all like 20 years I've been doing it.
Well done. Oh my God.
Wow. Not interested. Take us through why it's called Significant Other then, because you're thrown together through the situation of heart attack and a belly full of pills. But how does it... That's like the first 5 minutes. How do we progress as the episodes go?
Well, for a while I was calling it Insignificant Other until somebody corrected me. I didn't. It's because in the first episode, the only way Sam can get himself discharged is if he says he has a significant other, and he cites me as his significant other. So we're sort of bound together by some paperwork early on.
It's a great way of describing this romance. You know, they're not, you can't call them lovers, you can't call them, you know, romantic partners. Like,
it's,
what is
it's
it?
It's not exactly brimming with sexual chemistry at the beginning,
no,
is it?
It's not. And like, I think that's a great choice of words. It's like, this is my significant other, and it's about as cold and pesky, but there is hope in there as well.
It's got an element of that, you know, when people make, when they're kind of like 25 and just broken up from like the 10th boyfriend that year, and they say, and they turn to them, the mate that they went to school with, and said, look, if it's still like this when I'm 40, let's just fucking get married. Did either of you ever make a pact with anyone like that?
Yes, I had a pact with one of my friend who was gay at the, and we had a pact that we would marry at 40, but he is now married and so am I, so
phew.
And I'm 45.
There you go, perfect. You, Seth?
Yeah, I've definitely made that pact, and with people who have probably thought to themselves, please, dear God, you're not unmarried by the time I'm 40, so I'll have to marry you.
Shoving your wife, you're like, what about this one, please? you got a great supporting cast as well. Yeah, Ben Bailey-Smith, Kelly Bryan, and like, when you say Sean Williamson, no one knows the name Sean Williamson, but of course, we're talking Barry from EastEnders. Who is like one of the most memeable kind of like British actors ever. Is it difficult when you're faced with Barry from EastEnders on set, not to just think, fucking hell, that's Barry from EastEnders?
Well, the thing is, when you're on set with someone, you have quite a lot of time to chat between scenes, particularly we were doing night shoots and stuff. And it was quite a long scene in a hangar in a car with some sort of moving images behind us. So we had lots of good chats, and he was talking about the karaoke that he does, and you know, I just had some nice chats with him. So I was very much, but you know, I'm currently filming with Danny Dyer, and not sort of thinking constantly, you know, that you very quickly get to know people as their characters, yeah, and as them, you know, because there's a lot of chats on sets usually, unless you're with people that are method and staying in character. But
I mean, if Danny Dyer ever called me Tweakle, I think my knees would go.
Yeah, like my knees are going several times a day.
I'd have a little wobble. Now it's filmed in Manchester, as you say. It's like set in a big city to kind of compress that feeling of like loneliness within a million people. And one question I've got, and it occurred to me after I watched the latest episode of Succession, which, and it hasn't come out yet, it comes out on Monday, but it's there's a scene, and you shot a lot of stuff in Piccadilly Station or around that area and outside locations. I'm always intrigued as to how weird it feels to film in real life places when there's like some poor guy in a high viz having to stop people cross a road, or ask people, please, can you not walk your dog just for 5 minutes? Does it, is it, and in Succession, they shut down like a whole of like a street in Manhattan to drive a limo down, and there's a big thing that happens. The pressure to get it right in those situations is quite immense, because people just want to go about their day. They're quite annoyed, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, I imagine somewhere like Manhattan, they're so used to things being filmed that they don't bat an eyelid. And I, you know, when I film in cities, that tends to be the feeling. Whereas if you're filming something, I remember for Guernsey, the film, we had to film something in Devon where the Nazis, you know, had arrived on Guernsey. So we had to sort of turn all these shops into kind of, shops with, and then we had some sort of men goose marching down the road. And I think because that was in Devon, there was a lot of like, really, you know, it's really interesting and lots of people come and watch and all the rest of it. And then it feels like you've got a little sort of mini theatre audience, and that's nice too. But I think when my experience, I don't know about you, Yusuf, is when you film in a busy city, like nobody could give a shit. I mean, like nobody bats an eyelid, because that's kind of the dynamic that you have in the show, the city kind of thing of everyone's kind of doing head down, doing their own thing. And that's the very specific urban loneliness that we're exploring a bit in the show, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, our scene where we were having that row in the Northern Quarter, got a few onlookers and stuff, but it wasn't as busy as you would think. I think where it always turns is when you shoot something at night and when the pubs let up.
Yeah.
That's where it gets interesting. I did a movie called Hummingbird or Redemption a long time ago, Stephen Knight's first movie. And we shot that in slap bang in the center of London, at like 2 or 3 in the morning, and at about 3:30 or whatever it was, when the bars and people would just start to come stumbling in, it would get very hairy. And like the security, you have these scenes which you're supposed to just be staying very calm, you know, and Jason Statham was in it and everything, and he draws a lot of attention. And you're supposed to be staying calm, while you can see out of the corner of your eye, the security just sort of holding back this throng of drunken zombies all trying to get through. And, you know,
and you're there trying to find your truth. Yeah.
Yeah. You're just sort of like, oh my God, what the hell's going on? And they would just concentrate.
Significant Other, it's an adaptation, or it's already been out in Israel, right? That's where it originated from. Have you seen the original one? Have you kind of like, is it similar in tone, or do you kind of like think, right, we're just going to do our own thing here?
Well, Yusuf will tell you. Yusuf watched it before we filmed, and then I watched it at the end on his advice, because it can throw you a bit watching the original, because it's, you sort of go, oh, gosh, because it's so good. It's quite intimidatingly brilliant. But we were obviously adapting it for a British audience, and I think our writers did an amazing job of that. I watched it at the end, and I'm really grateful I didn't watch it sooner, because I think it would have made me a bit nervous.
Yeah,
Asi Cohen and Dana Modone, who created it, also act in it. So they've got total confidence and freedom to just do whatever they need. And they are, you know, the way they play it is so subtle and under. And I think if we did the same thing, if it was a sort of quote-unquote Israeli show, shown for a British audience, it wouldn't work. So our Hamish and Donna Finero, our writers, did an incredible job of, you know, pulling out the story, but setting it in a UK context and also making it a British show.
Yeah.
Talks about jelly babies and things.
Yeah, exactly.
I've watched Ananda, which the writer, Israeli writer, did as well, and enjoyed that very much. And I think Hullraisers, you know, the comedy, that was adapted from an Israeli show. So I think there definitely is a sensibility, a sort of comedy that we share, because I think that they seem to have the same kind of, I mean, I don't want to say dark humour, but there's something quite that adapts well to a British audience, I think, in the Israeli comedy sensibility.
What do you think the overarching message is of significant other than? Is it that there's love for, there's someone for everyone? Is it don't give up? Is it hope? Is what do you reckon?
What is at its core is this idea that, you know, what you're looking for might be right next to you. You just can't see it because of all your, shit, you know?
Yeah. And also that, you know, it's rare to experience a lightning bolt of love, isn't it? You know, it's like those moments are written about more than they actually occur. And this show does a good example of actually sometimes you just have to kind of like chip away at it. And it's like, and kind of like find your groove with each other. And I think that's what it really told.
True. Yeah. I mean, like so often the romantic kind of the romantic version of life is sort of portrayed and life will fall short every time. And I think it's good to have something that's, I think, probably more people have experienced and is potentially more relatable than, you know, something as wonderful like Four Weddings and a Funeral or like Love at First Sight sort of scenarios. But I think that's not what happens here. But there's something just as deep and true that occurs.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to clarify, the three of us all experience love at first sight. Everyone else has to kind of like chip away at it, of course.
I experience it every day.
That's right. Well, there we are.
Final question is, what are you guys watching at the moment that you think, why the fuck am I not in that?
I am watching Succession. I'm actually going to a party tonight, a Succession party, where they're doing a screening of the last episode, but I will not be going to that because me and my husband are on
the last
episode
is being screened somewhere. You must be friends with Jesse Armstrong, Catherine.
I did a show years ago called The Old Guys, written by Jesse. And
he's doing a cast and crew screening, isn't he?
Yes, damn! Yes. But I'm being very good about not going to, because, you know, I don't want to ruin it for us. So. Yeah. And then we've just watched The Last of Us, which I have to say was not something I thought I would be that into, because I'm not in, you know, I don't do computer games and stuff. And oh my goodness, I was so into that show.
Yeah.
I thought the performances were just immense and I just loved, it's actually making me think I want to play the game.
Oh, I'm not a gamer at all. It is an incredible game. If you want to find out what happens in season two before season two airs, just go and play the game, because it's all there and it's horrific and it's grim.
God,
Youssef, you've got a whiff of Westeros about you. Come on, why haven't you been? Haven't you been in Game of Thrones yet?
That has been the question that followed me all throughout Game of Thrones. And you know, you should be in Game of Thrones, which everybody says as easily as possible. And try as I might, you know, Nina Gold did bring me in for a few bits, but I never got it. Came very close to being in the next season of House of Dragon, but didn't go my way. I got down to the last two, didn't go my way. It's just not meant to be.
Casting directors never forget. You know, there have been times, you know, there have been loads of people that ended up like being major players in the world of Westeros that didn't get in the early doors. And actually,
much like the North.
Exactly. The North.
Nina Gold never forgets.
Precisely.
No, people are always asking Harry if he's in Lord of the Rings. And I think he's a bit fed up with it. I mean, it's like, and then you go, why aren't I in Lord of the Rings?
I
will make a punt for Succession as well. I am very happy to say I'm on the Succession bandwagon as well. I think it's worth pointing out a show that has just done the impossible and united everyone in agreeing that it's one of the greatest shows on TV. And I did message Lucy Prebble, who's one of the writers and one of the executive producers of it, to try and sort of insinuate my way into it. And then I realized do you know what? I do not want to be on the show. It's one of the very few shows.
I feel like that. Sometimes
I don't want to be on. I just want to watch it.
I don't always want to meet my heroes either, yeah. Because you want them to be there over there for you to admire, and you can almost ruin things for yourself if.
100%.
I completely agree.
Tell her it's significant other. Is it coming out on ITVX first in like a whole job lot? How's it being fed to us all?
Yeah, June 8th. It's out on ITV. X. It is a very thankfully, and I'm quoting other people here, it's a very bingeable show. It's one of those you watch one episode and you're just going to want to watch the next one.
100%.
You know, and so hopefully people enjoy it. And then ITV got this weird thing where they 9 months have to go by or something like that, and then it gets put on actual television.
Gotcha.
And we're all desperate to do it again. So I hope everybody watches it and says nice things, really.
Perfect. Well, there we go. Let's cross our fingers for significant other two. Catherine, Youssef, thank you so much. It's been lovely seeing you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Jamie.
There we go. Significant Other is out now on ITVX. I think it will appear on ITV1 at some point. I don't really know. I don't really understand the metrics of how that works. I think it stays on ITVX for quite a while and then it will appear at some point. Who knows? But thank you so much to Youssef and Catherine for sparing their time. And we're going to have a few more chats like that with people that aren't necessarily on your HBOs or your Sky Atlantics and stuff. We're kind of opening the doors. We're a broad church. Do you know what?
Checking in with interesting people.
Yeah, exactly. I only just realised that the series Broadchurch, we're a broad church. I only just realised that it was about the breadth of the difference of characters in that show. It was called Broadchurch.
Oh, yeah.
Makes sense. Top fact for you.
It's lovely. We've had a bit of everything in this episode, haven't we? So
bit of everything. So Monday will be our last episode for a short while. We're going to do the live episode and we're going to kind of like take a bit of a break and have a bit of a rethink, because we do want to open up the podcast to more types of shows. We're just trying to work out how best to do that. We may also have like different things that we want to try out. If you're a hardcore Dragoncast fan, we might have something that you might quite like. We're still kind of spitballing it. It's very much in the living plus stages of the PowerPoint presentation. I've got some sweating over the figures.
I think generally what we want to do is open up the world, talk more often about more things.
Yeah.
And that just feels like a really exciting way to talk about. The thing is, there's so much out there and people got in touch to say, can you cover this extensively? Can you cover this extensively? And we can't really do that without foregoing sleeping, eating and sitting on the toilet. So we're probably going to try and just check in and on as much as we can. I mean, I'd love to talk about Black Mirror. Black Mirror stuff sounds really good. There's a lot of talking points about telly generally at the moment. And I think
one of the reasons we can't jump into things kind of feet first and do like in-depth stuff, like for instance Silo is a good example of that, is that there's no point in us going all in on something that you guys aren't interested in listening to. We don't want to kind of like get six episodes in like realize that we've not judged it right. You kind of have to let a series a title develop for a season or so until you kind of get a feel that people are interested in listening, right?
Yes, and the nice thing with telly being so non-linear is that we can talk about Silo now. It's all like, it's there. If you want to jump in, you can do that. It's not, you know, we're not spoiling stuff. Well, you did a little bit, but we're just sort of saying, look, there's some really cool stuff going on. We've just found out about this. You know, everybody is very busy. Like watching telly is quite a full-time job. And I think because of that, like you just have to go to stuff that you're drawn to and don't worry too much about things you're not. That's how we're going to be doing this, aren't we? We're not going to be watching stuff we don't like.
Absolutely. There's no point. Life is far too short. I would say we've had a couple of emails through. Just wanted to say, hey to Liz Brady. Thank you very much, Liz, for getting in touch. Long time podcast, Mister of Thronecast.
I've just throwing Castanghouse and Dragoncast, hopefully. New show, The White House Plumbers, is a recommendation from Liz, which is which does look good, and that is on my list. That's Justin Theroux and Woody Harrelson. It's on Sky Atlantic. I think it's an HBO thing as well. It's about, it's a, like a fictionalized thing about how the Watergate scandal.
Yeah, it's about Watergate, but it's fictionalized. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great that idea.
Does look very good. Does look good. And Justin Theroux looks like a sexy Mario. In the in all the pictures, got a lovely moustache.
Mamma mia.
William Porteous says, "Hey Jamie and Chris, well done Succession coverage. Always a very good listen. Thank you very much.
Oh,
here's an idea.
Thanks.
Why not cover Your Honor? It's really very damn good. That is good. You know what? Your Honor is another one. Mm. It's probably not something you we would like do season by season because it's season one was maybe 2 years ago now, and season two's been out a while. If it comes back for season three, we may well consider that. But it gets season one of Your Honor, absolutely amazing. I think it's on Sky, but the second season's on Paramount Plus, just to confuse you a little bit more. Said also Ripley is on the horizon. What's Ripley? Do we know what Ripley is? Is that something to do with Alien?
Knowing how crazy shows are with IP, it's probably the gritty origin story of the person who invented Ripley's Believe It or Not.
Well, here we go. Hang on a second. It's a Netflix series. Oh, good cast. Andrew Scott, as we know, is Fit Vicar? Fit Vicar? Hot Priest.
He really was.
Johnny
Fit
Flynn.
Vicar.
Johnny Flynn is a... Errol Flynn's your man Bronze brother,
Jerome
Flynn's brother, not Errol Flynn, he's far too old. And Dakota Fanning is in that as well. It's based on the Patricia Highsmith series of novels. It delves into the talented Mr. Ripley, which is coming out on Netflix.
Okay,
so
really
that
sound
sounds
like
pretty
anything,
good,
you know.
I'll give that a go.
You give that a go, and if it's good, I'll watch it.
Julia, again, just a little bit of praise. Thank you very much, Julia. Just says thank you for the Succession podcast. I listened to the HBO thanks. Official podcast and have to say that yours was much more enjoyable. Oh, stop! We can't
go on.
On that. We can't possibly.
Tell us
please,
more.
No, stop! Don't stop.
Be specific. Be specific. What did you? That is very kind, though. It's very, very kind.
We do love all the feedback. It really does make the. Keeps the wheels turning. So we'll see you Monday.
It really does.
So we see you Monday for the Game of Thrones, the Iron Throne, season 8, episode 6.
Oh my god! Yeah.
So no idea how that's going to go. Obviously,
you're going to roll the red carpet out for me.
Absolutely. Precisely. That is exactly what's going to happen. So that'll be exciting. We'll see you then. Okay. I don't know. Yeah. Can't sign it off Dracarys. It's not a Dragoncast one. So we'll sign it off with.
See you next time.
Should we sign it off with a line from the Idol? See you later, you brazen little minx.
If you'd like to get involved in the podcast, just head over to Twitter @DragonCast_pod or email DragonCast@daftdoris.com and leave us your Easter eggs, predictions and thoughts on the show. You can also watch this episode over on our YouTube channel. Just search for Dragoncast Jamie East. Any support, whether it's a follow, a share, a mention to your friend on the bus or a tattoo on your backside, is very much appreciated. Dragoncast is hosted by me, Jamie East, along with Chris Mandel, and is a Daft Doris production. Dracarys.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.